From Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Recovery Room. I'm Dr. Rick Green. Over the last 50 years, the mammogram has gained greater importance as a screening tool to detect early breast cancer and to improve outcomes in this disease. Since the inception of mammographic screening, there have been questions regarding the benefits of this technique, and these have persisted to the present. Today, on the Recovery Room, we will explore the role of mammography as a screening technique for early breast cancer and talk to a leading breast surgeon and mammographer regarding their thoughts about routine screening, the benefits, and the current controversies. That's today on the Recovery Room.
Support for this episode of The Recovery Room comes from the American College of Surgeons.
Making sense of modern medicine, this is The Recovery Room. I'm Dr. Rick Green. Over the last five decades, mammography has evolved as one of the most important screening studies to identify early breast cancer. Recently, however, questions have arisen regarding the value and role of this screening tool. We will explore these issues surrounding mammography today with our guest, Carrie Kaufman, MD, who is a breast surgeon in Bellingham, Washington, and currently the chairman of the National Accreditation Program for Breast Centers, and Carl DiOrsi, MD, Director of Breast Imaging Research and Professor of Radiology, Oncology, and Hematology at Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia. Carrie and Carl, it's great having you with me today on the Recovery Room, especially talking about this particular topic, which I really think is so controversial today. And both of you being experts in your particular areas of surgery and radiology, I'm delighted that you're on the Recovery Room and we can talk a little about the role of mammography, especially in terms of what has come through from this Canadian study, which I'm sure both of you are quite familiar with. So I'd like to pose the first question for Carrie. You're a clinician. You see patients every day. You recommend mammography, obviously, for your reasonable risk women who might get breast cancer. What are you telling them today versus what you might have been telling them 10 years ago? Have been any changes occurring in your own approach to mammographic screening?
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. My approach really hasn't changed a whole lot. The average risk woman is a woman with no family history of breast cancer. She's not had a previous biopsy. She's not had an abnormal mammogram. And she wants to know, you know, how can she be sure that she can diagnose or find breast cancer at its earliest stage and get the least invasive treatment. And so I've recommended the American Cancer Society standard, which is annual screening mammography each year after age 40. And I believe that identifies the women who develop breast cancer at the earliest stage and affords them the best treatment.
So, Carl, as a mammographer, do you sort of fit into that recommendation as well? Do you support Carrie in that?
Yes, I fully support what Gary said. We begin to get a fairly good increase in breast cancer in 40 to 49, which makes it certainly ideal to start screening at that age. You wouldn't start at age 20 or 24 because there's just not enough cancer there to screen, and there's more deleterious effects at that age for screening than there is beginning at 40. So absolutely, I fully agree that we should start at age 40.
Well, you know, you as a mammographer certainly have seen a lot of changes in the technology over the years. It seems to me one of the problems here in comparing studies that might have been done 15, 20 years ago is we're using different technology for mammography. Can you comment on that for us?
Yeah, sure. That's really true that the technology is much better today, but that can only make the data even more striking if we have better technology today. We cannot reproduce those trials that were done years ago because they had an arm or a group of patients who were offered nothing, who received nothing but clinical exam. That could not be done today. So these studies are very, very important to look at because they really demonstrate what can occur when you just introduce mammography over not having mammography at all. Now, the better technology today can only dramatically increase that difference. So I think it's very important to look at these old studies. And with the better technology today, and if we could do it today, I'm sure that the numbers would be even better.
Well, one of the things that women still seem to have some concerns about is the risks of frequent radiation. For instance, if we're going to recommend annual mammograms, is there a substantial risk from the radiation effect of mammography?
There really isn't a substantial risk. There have been articles that show that the benefit to risk ratio regarding radiation is about 5-1, that the benefit is 5 times the risk of developing a cancer that would kill a woman. And this is, of course, all modeling. You can't actually do this. But even with the modeling and with computer analysis, it's a 5-1 benefit to risk ratio.
Carrie, you're also the chair of the National Accreditation Program for Breast Centers. And right now, I think there are about 550 of these accredited breast centers throughout the country, and more are joining the accreditation program. What is the position of your organization, which obviously is an important part of the Commission on Cancer of the American College of Surgeons? What are you saying officially in this controversial area of mammography?
Well, the National Accreditation Program for Breast Centers, as you know, is an organization of about representing 20 different organizations that run the spectrum of care for breast patients. And we discussed this issue, the Canadian issue, and the overall screening mammography issue amongst our representatives, and we endorse a statement of supporting annual screening mammography for women over 40, and we have submitted that and actually been joined by the Commission on Cancer in support of that statement and in contrast to what the Canadian study has said, because we should remember when you were talking about the quality of mammography, the Canadian study only looked at patients who had mammograms from 1980 to 1985 for those 5 years, and they followed those patients up. And the quality of mammography in those years is worlds away from what we have today.
Carrie, since you mentioned the Canadian study, and this is sort of a central to our conversation today, can you briefly go over that study and what the conclusions of that study were so our listening public will understand what this really means to them?
Well, in summary, they followed two large groups of patients. These patients were asked as volunteers, people who wanted to participate in the study. It was not a population-based study, meaning everybody in this city gets mammograms and everybody in that city doesn't. It was women who wanted to join the study. And there were large numbers of patients who joined. One group got a clinical breast exam, a manual exam of the breast, and the other group got a clinical breast exam, the manual exam of the breast, plus a mammogram. And it was from 1980 to 1985 where these patients were followed. They had mammograms. And beyond that, they were followed over time. Now, the study said that there was no difference in women in the age groups of 40 to 59. There was no difference in finding cancers earlier or no difference in survival between the two groups. But due to the poor quality of mammography, the lack of recognized standard randomization of patients, there are great issues that occurred challenging the results of this study when it's been published many years ago and again now. So the actual data says there is no difference, but the question is whether this was a good study or not.
The other thing that was brought out in this study, and I think was certainly important, is they claimed there was an overdiagnosis of cancer, or potentially false positives were being seen and led to unnecessary biopsy. How do you counter that particular argument for the well-done mammography that Carl and his colleagues will do today? What do you tell women about that?
Right. And that really underscores the lack of quality of the mammogram. The average size of breast cancer in the group that had mammograms versus the group that didn't have mammograms were essentially the same. And we all know that when you do mammograms, you find cancers that are much smaller than the cancers that can be found by clinical physical exam. And so I think by itself is reason to discredit the study because the mammography was of poor quality. There were external reviewers who looked from the United States who came and looked at the quality of the mammography, and they also agreed that the quality was of poor quality, not even state-of-the-art for those years in the 1980s.
So, Carl, this gets back. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying. So I tell patients that it's worlds away from what we can deliver today with a digital mammogram and close images backed with ultrasound. It's just two worlds away.
Right. So this gets really to the technology issue, and that's what Carl was talking about before. We can't compare what went on in the 80s to what goes on in 2014. Is that correct, Carl?
Yes. Let me just back up to that Canadian trial a minute, because Carrie brought up some very important issues. As Carrie stated, the physicist who was in charge of mammography quality at that time resigned because even with the mammography done at that time, the quality of that mammography was so poor that he just quit. The other issue is they actually did clinical exam prior to randomization, and what happened is about 11 or 12 women with clinical findings, which is not a screening trial. A screening trial is done for someone with no findings. 11 palpable cancers were assigned to the mammo group. Now, mammo is not going to help at all with clinical findings. It's for non-clinical findings. So that assignment of these palpable findings, 11 of which turned out to be malignant, is not the fault of mammography. So those are two huge, huge errors in the trial and make its results very, very questionable.
So what I'm hearing is this goes against the concepts of a randomized control trial.
Absolutely.
Well, I mean, we have a trial like this. It's been published in a major journal. It's out there now. What do we do as clinicians, as imagers, as organizations interested in quality and early cancer detection? What do we do to counter a trial like this? And I'll turn it to Carrie first.
Well, I think this program and other programs are getting the message out that the experts in breast care, we're not the people that are publishing some of these trials, not the Canadian trial, but even some of the overviews. They're not the experts. The experts are the people that see patients day by day. I have seen a tremendous change in my own personal practice where the average size of breast cancer was 2 to 3 centimeters regularly before the, I guess you could call it the last century in the 90s. And this century, we're seeing the average size down to, you know, 15 millimeters, 12 millimeters, 8 millimeters. They're just small cancers, and it's pleasant for a practicing treating physician to get a cancer that you're much more likely to cure, not have to do a mastectomy, not have to give chemotherapy, than to find these cancers waiting for them to become palpable. So I think it's just spreading the message, and I wish that they would interview experts in the field rather than just statisticians and epidemiologists who are necessary, but they need to be balanced as well as having some experts on these panels.
I'm so delighted you brought this up, because some of our colleagues who agree with studies like this have suggested that these small cancers should be left alone. They'll never become clinically relevant. So we're actually operating on more women than we need to. How do you counter that?
My response is you haven't seen enough patients with cancer, because there's many women who already attest to that philosophy. I don't want to see my doctor. I feel a lump, but I don't want to see my doctor. It's probably not important. And they come in with a large lump, with metastasis, with a situation that's too late. And like I say, we've seen such an improvement in the quality of patients that I have today. Today, I have two kinds of patients, the very small cancers and the very big cancers. Very few in the 2 to 3 centimeter range, because either women are getting screened and we find them early before they have a chance to grow, or they're ignoring mammography and they come in after it's just very large. So I think it's just getting the message out.
So, Carl, you're saying also that with the quality of mammographic techniques we have today, a small lesion found mammographically, that should always lead to a biopsy and treatment. Is that right?
Well, with the knowledge, there is obviously some degree of, it's not really overdiagnosis, it's overtreatment. There is some degree, but it's probably on the order of 1% to 2%. So, you know, do you want to not have something treated that is pathologically shown to be a cancer with a 99% chance that it's going to evolve? Or do you want to take a chance and say, it's 1%, I hope I'm in the 1%. So yes, today, because we don't know which cancers are going to progress and which cancers are not going to progress, so today, yes, until we have that knowledge, at least pathologically, which is not there, and certainly not before pathology, yes, they should be treated.
Let me ask you something about magnetic resonance imaging. This is something that's obviously has come into play over the last few years, either as a screening tool or in somebody who's already had a diagnosis of cancer. What is your use of magnetic resonance imaging, MRI? What do you think it should be used? How should it be used in this particular area of breast cancer early screening?
Well, I think its major use now is in women who have a risk of developing breast cancer greater than 20% or higher. Because the exam is highly sensitive to picking up cancer, the flip side is that it does throw up a lot of red flags that don't turn out to be cancer. So in order to use it correctly, we should really be exposing a high-risk population to this additional test. It's also an invasive test that requires the injection of a contrast agent. And it's an expensive test as well. And also, there's an access problem. Not every area or every facility will have the ability to do breast MRI. So when you look at all these things, you have to say, okay, where am I going to get my biggest bang for the buck from MRI? And those are in high-risk women, again, with a relatively high lifetime risk of malignancy, usually 20% or greater. And, of course, the BRCA patients, the genetically predisposed women who may get breast cancer.
Carrie, could you weigh in on this? And is this sort of your feeling? You agree with Carl?
Yes, the MRI has become a very useful test. It's probably the most sensitive test we have to look for breast cancer, but it's not a screening test. It's really used in the workup of someone, in my use, for someone who has breast cancer already. The screening use is really for those high-risk patients, as Carl mentioned, a greater than 20% lifetime risk or a breast cancer gene-positive patient, the patient with a very strong family history. The question is how often it should be used. Is it yearly or every other year? And that's another difficult issue.
Right. We've been talking about generally the low-risk patient in routine mammographic screening. Somebody with a genetic mutation, obviously, you're going to treat differently. Somebody with a strong family history. Carrie, what do you think the role of ultrasound is as a screening tool?
Well, the role of ultrasound in general is a wonderful tool for the breast. When used in a screening study, along with mammography, it did pick up breast cancers as a screening tool that were not found by mammography. This is a large radiology study that they did. The problem was that ultrasound is so sensitive, it picks up a lot of normal or benign lesions. And so there was a lot of extra workup that was necessary for these benign lesions. And so although it did pick up some cancers that were not seen on mammography, the excess findings of benign lesions and extra biopsies and extra images suggest that it is not an excellent screening tool, although there's a new version of ultrasound, which is called whole breast ultrasound, where you can examine the whole breast at once. And this is being strongly investigated as a screening tool, especially as an adjunct for the woman with very dense breast tissue on mammography.
Right. The issue of dense breast is interesting. As you know, at least 9 or 10 states in the United States have now passed legislation that actually encourage, let's say, radiologists and imagers to talk to their patients about breast density and even get MRI if they have dense breasts. Carl, what is your take on this? The young woman or the middle-aged woman with dense breast, what other screening techniques do they need?
Yeah, the dense breast issue you can divide actually into two compartments. One is related to risk, and the other is related to hiding tumors. The risk relation to dense breast is really up in the air as far as I'm concerned. The estimates range all over the place, although there probably is some minimal risk from increased breast density. It's not to the levels that's really usually quoted. The more important issue is hiding breast cancers in dense breast because the density of a tumor is pretty equal to the background density of the breast. So breast ultrasound and MRI are both good techniques, but one of the issues with breast ultrasound, as Gary pointed out, is one, the massive amount of false positives it throws up, so that these areas have to be further worked up, usually by needle biopsy. The other issue is that this is an examination that requires real-time evaluation, hopefully by a physician, so that that physician has to then go in and take 10 or 15 minutes to look at these areas. And again, it becomes an access problem, and it becomes a problem related to ability or to the numbers of radiologists who are available to do this. So again, you know, we always have risk and benefit, and we always weigh pluses and minuses. And, you know, there's no free lunch anymore. You pay for everything you get.
Well, that's a great intro because, gentlemen, as you know, we can't have a complete conversation without talking about healthcare costs and who's going to pay for studies. So let me just give you a concept. We have this Canadian study out there. There's some other controversial studies out there. And now you have insurance companies who obviously read the literature. So, Carrie, what do you say to an insurance company that now refuses to pay for screening because they've been reading the Canadian study?
That's an excellent question. Dealing with insurance companies is always difficult for them to get the concept of the treating physician who is caring for the individual. I would explain to the insurance company in a letter that this is one study, that there are many other studies that show the value of screening mammography. As we mentioned, the quality of mammograms in 1980 was not what we would get today, that poor randomization that they had, that it wasn't a population-based study, but what they call an opportunistic study, that there is evidence that is well established in literature that routine screening mammography decreases breast cancer mortality. Don Barry wrote an article several years ago that noted that the decrease in breast cancer mortality that we've seen year after year for the last several years, half of it is due to early diagnosis, which is primarily through screening. And I would also challenge that there is harms. There may be harms in a screening of doing a false positive biopsy, but there are also harms of missing a diagnosis of breast cancer in a young woman with children. And they have it. This occurs. So I would lay out that presentation to the insurance company and underscore the fact that this is a quality of care issue and that we owe our patients the best care. And the best care is prevention or early diagnosis.
Carrie and Carl, you've probably both seen a remarkable article that recently appeared in the New England Journal of Medicine that reported that the Swiss Medical Board has called for a moratorium on breast screening strategies because of these recent studies, and even suggested that the continuation of screening may be unethical because of these studies. Now, I want to get your opinion, Carrie and Carl. If you were called to testify in front of the Swiss Policy Board, let's say, what would you say about this issue and their stance on taking this particular stance on breast screening? Let me start with Carrie.
Well, I would say that information in, information out, I think it depends on the information that they are using to make these judgments. The information that they're using to make these judgments are really limited to those studies or focused on those studies that challenge routine screening mammography. And they're taking those studies, such as the Canadian study, which is a flawed study, they're taking those studies at face value, using those studies to make their judgment. So I can understand that they would make a judgment, what the judgments they have made, if you only use studies that say mammography does not save lives and encouraging women to get mammograms is not going to save lives, so we shouldn't do that. But I think they're misled by studies that are inaccurately researched and reported, and that's what our challenge is. So I would bring the studies that exist that have been randomized controlled trials that the World Health Organization endorses. And by note, the World Health Organization did not endorse the Canadian study as a population-based trial, and underscore those well-recognized bodies that endorse screening mammography, and I would challenge them to look at the best study, not the worst study.
And Carl, as a leading breast imager, what would you tell this Swiss policy board?
You know, it depends on what piece of data you look at. You can't look at one small piece of data from any trial and then make that an entire policy. You can always find something that will help your decision not to do something or to do something. You have to look at the totality, and the totality of the information is that mammography has much more benefit than risk, period. Whether you want to call that risk radiation, whether you want to call that risk biopsy, the benefit of early tumors and mortality saved outweighs all the risks. So I would tell them, show me where the risks are globally worse than the benefit. And I think they made a decision, I feel, more based on the cultural and financial aspects of their health system than on the data.
Gentlemen, before we close today, I want to give you an opportunity to give some closing remarks on any issues that we haven't covered or anything you think is important to the listeners listening to this discussion. So, Carrie, any thoughts as we leave?
Well, I first of all, I want to thank you for bringing this topic up because it's a very important topic. We both feel passionate about this, and I believe that the reason we feel passionate is we've seen directly with our own eyes that regular mammography works. I think the challenges against mammography are primarily financial, and that's the undercurrent that we don't really see. The USPS Task Force has set up their most recent review of mammography that's going to be coming up in the next year or two, and they've chosen to exclude any studies that were done outside the United States and any studies that were done before 2004. By doing so, they will absolutely eliminate all the randomized control studies that validate mammography and only be able to look at studies that will be negative for mammography. So this issue will continue, and I believe all the individuals who care for patients on a one-to-one basis and in large groups will feel that mammography does work, and we just need to get the message out there on top of the confounding messages that are financially based.
Carl, your final thoughts?
I would urge women to really continue with screening mammography. And again, the basis is that the benefits outweigh any of the risks. And I would urge, hopefully, societies such as the NAPBC and the ACR and the various medical societies to really push for lay education on this topic with seminars, with discussions. And I would encourage women to seek out these areas where they can learn about the issues and about breast cancer and about screening. So I think education and keeping in mind that screening benefits far outweigh the risks, I think that's the message that women have to take home. To get into more detail at this level is difficult, but I think we should have lay education seminars for women so that they can get accurate data on screening and breast cancer.
We've been talking with Carrie Kaufman, a breast surgeon in Bellingham, Washington, and currently chairman of the National Accreditation Program for Breast Centers, and Carl DeOrsi, director of breast imaging research and professor of radiology, oncology, and hematology at Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia. Carl, Carrie, thank you so much for being with us today on The Recovery Room.
Thank you, Rick.
The Recovery Room is supported by the American College of Surgeons. The producer is Tina Simmons. Technical support provided by Jim Losby. Find us on the web at facs.org/recoveryroom.